Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we're taking our show on the road to Hacumba Hot Springs, where we have a very critical issue that we're going to be speaking with some folks about. And that is the proposed massive energy projects right now. Specifically today, we're going to be talking about a proposed Soytech series of solar projects. I have with me several guests today. My first guest is Donna Tisdale, who's chair of the Boulevard Planning Group. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam.
Donna, can you give our readers some scale and perspective on just how big this project is?
There's four projects proposed. They cover almost 1,500 acres, which is about 2.3 square miles. And it's between almost 7,500 of these giant trackers that are 1,200 square feet each, and if you take that square footage, it would total about 48 Walmart supercenters.
Wow, that's huge. And how close will they be to homes?
As close as 100 feet to the front door of several homes, and far too close to many others.
And they're 30 feet tall and so
30
forth.
30 feet tall, they track, and they put out a glare at certain times. And some of our homes, the project report says they'll have at least a 45 minute of a very strong glare.
Now, they're putting these not just out here in vacant city lots or something. These are going into wetlands and areas where there's a lot of environmental issues. My second guest today is Howard Cook, who is the chair of the Hacumba Sponsor Group. Howard, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. We need publicity on these massive environmental catastrophes.
Yeah, now, speaking of environmental catastrophe, apart from issues about, you know, things like views and glare, that would be issues many places where these kind of projects get proposed, out here in rural East County, there's a special concern that has been raised. Howard, you've raised some questions about just how much water this project would use. These concerns first came to light because the ECO substation that SDG&E built in the same area here grossly underestimated how much water it would use. How much more water did that project use than what they estimated?
The original estimate was 30 million gallons for what they call the ECHO substation, and which also includes the Boulevard, smaller Boulevard substation. Mm-hmm. It is now, using actual figures, they say it will be between 90 and 100 million gallons.
So over three times as much as what they said.
Exactly.
Donna, have any of the neighbors near the substation encountered water problems because of that slight little misestimate there?
I'm not aware of those next to the substation, but what we have had is next to at least one of the Soytech projects, UDEC was doing some well testing, and now the water report says that it's a drawdown of 19.9 feet from the one neighbor's well. That's not significant when 20 feet is considered significant.
So just this initial work they were doing caused almost a 20-foot drop in a neighbor's well, and they don't think that's significant?
Well, 20 feet is considered significant. So in our opinion, manipulation, if you say 19.9 is not significant, but 20 feet is, that's pretty dang close.
Definitely a concern. Howard, you've taken a look at the programmatic environmental impact report for the Soytech project, and you notice that they seem to have left out a few major things that would typically use a lot of water. Give us examples of a couple of items they forgot to mention in this report.
Well, perhaps the largest are two concrete batch plants, including the rock crushing.
So they're going to crush rocks and make concrete on site, which uses massive amounts of water. And this is not mentioned.
Not mentioned at all. One of these locations, 10 acres, and another one within a mile is 14 acres, and these will be in continuous production for over 2 years.
Wow. Another concern is that the ECO substation, of course, used three times as much water. The reason had something to do with the specific soil conditions out here, didn't it? Tell us what that was.
Yes, the reasons quoted in the SDG&E request for a increase in the amount of water provided is that the sandy soil, the alluvial soil, is much deeper than they thought, and the soil dryness just sops up the water. And that's unique to our East County environment.
So wait a minute. So is there any reason to believe this Soytech project wouldn't have that same type of soil and the same type of problem? It's going to suck up three times more water than they thought?
It's in the same area, within 10 miles.
But they didn't account for that in the
Absolutely no.
Amazing. There's also the issue of these solar panels, of course, in order to work and to produce power, they have to keep them clean, which means they have to wash them regularly for the dust. Donna, how often are they projecting to wash these panels, according to Soytech?
Several times a year, but according to neighbors of Soytech's existing 1.5-megawatt project in Newberry Springs, they're out there fairly frequently, and I think that they found that they need to wash them more frequently to keep production up.
So they may have underestimated that, too. Now, I will add, we are going to reach out to Soytech, and we will be asking them for explanations, and we really look forward to hearing their answers. If they respond, we'll definitely be back with you, telling you what they have to say for themselves. Howard, you've spoken with some folks at Anza Borrego Desert State Park. I understand the former park director, Mark Jorgensen, and some people at the Anza Borrego Desert State Park Foundation.
Yes.
They raised some concerns about the impact of Soytech's water usage potentially on wildlife. Tell us what they said.
Okay. What they're concerned about is that several of these projects are right on top of the watershed as it goes down through Carrizo Creek to the San Sebastian Marsh some 30 miles further. And that's a major San Sebastian Marsh. It was named by Juan Bautista de Anza, the original explorers through here. And it's a 6 square mile area, and ultimately Carrizo Creek, that drains all of this area we're talking about, drains into that.
Yeah, I understand there's underground waterways that flow east.
Yes.
And, yeah, aquifers, and they come forward as ponds and things that bighorn sheep rely on and other animals.
And also another aspect of this are the endangered peninsular mountain sheep.
Yeah, now let me set some background up on this. These sheep are so endangered that when Pattern Energy built the Ocotillo Wind Farm, as mitigation for that project, one of the things they made them do to mitigate for potential harm to bighorn sheep out in Ocotillo is they said, you've got to restore the Carrizo Creek area up here. And now you're telling us the Anza Borrego people are afraid this water could dry up. Is that what they've said?
Yes, yes.
Because of the Soytech project.
And it's not just Carrizo Creek, but it's going to affect the little seeps of water where they live. And so
there's only like 900 of these things left, these very endangered species.
Yes, and there's only 42 who live just adjacent to one of these projects.
So it seems like there's no coordination. What we keep seeing is you'll see one project approved, and they're only looking at the narrow impact on that one little plot of land, and they're not looking at how other projects around
exactly.
might be impacting the
exactly.
same species. The water, of course, is the lifeblood for residents out here in East County, these rural areas where they're dependent on well water. And now we're in the worst drought in California history. That's according to Governor Brown, who just declared an emergency drought declaration last week. And on the heels of that, the Colorado River, which supplies 60% of our county's water supply, the federal government has just announced that they are drastically cutting supplies of the Colorado River water that they're going to be exporting. And of course, out here, people don't even have city water. They're dependent on wells. Donna, what happens? How serious could this be if these big energy projects, not just Soytech, but some of the big wind projects and other large industrial-scale solar projects, get approved and wind up significantly draining the groundwater?
That's one of our biggest fears out here, and I worked years ago to get part of our area established as a federally designated soil source aquifer. We need to get some funds and get the rest designated. But we have no access to imported water. We will never have access to imported water because it's too expensive to build pipelines out here, and the water's already been allocated. Colorado River is already over-allocated, so there would not be any water to bring out here even if we had a pipeline.
Howard, you've mentioned your greatest fear to me about what could happen from these. Can you repeat that for our listeners?
Well, as chairman of the Hakama Sponsor Group, we're naturally concerned about our water supply out here. Not for only ourselves, because these aquifers drain down from these projects and they'll take the water upstream and we'll be left with not much downstream. And so the water supply here in Hakama will be affected. And also at Hakama we have a lake. And
Which has been refilled, and you've seen some very endangered species out there.
Yeah, the tricolor blackbird, the species of special concern, will be impacted. And what it will do is cause a desert condition as opposed to a high desert condition that we have currently.
Right now, you're a lot of chaparral and trees.
Yes, and the plant life will dry up because the underlying groundwater is sucked dry by these big projects. And it affects everything downstream.
And with climate change, we don't know when we're going to get more rain or how much more rain we're going to get. So preserving these precious underwater ground sources that may never be replenished to former levels, or at least not for many years, would seem to be something that should be considered very, very carefully before approving something that could drain them forever.
The recharge, it takes many years for the water recharge to be replaced. I don't have the exact figures on that, but it's going to take years, particularly since the construction period is going to draw huge initial amounts out, and then the operation of these and the washing is
ongoing.
And so that's the result is going to be continued water withdrawal, and it will create a desert condition almost without question.
Well, that's very disturbing. Donna, do you have some final thoughts on this?
I forgot to mention that the SDG&E's Eco Substation Project got a contract to move 50 million gallons of water from the Campo Indian Reservation. And when they started that project, there were complaints from the neighbors, the tribal members, that some of them were living on springs, which is the surface water, and that was being drawn down, and they were having sand come into their wells and very concerned about overdraft.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, too, because they were also getting water from the Live Oak Springs Water Company, which was later put into receivership by the state because they found they were illegally selling water to various developers for various projects with absolutely no concern about the impact on the groundwater or the neighbors or the water quality.
Right. The bottom line is that the individual neighbors, if they're hurt, if their wells are run dry, it's up to the neighbor to prove that this, you know, fat cat company stole their water.
So if you don't have a rich landowner who can afford a lawyer, then you're just out of luck?
Pretty much.
Wow. Well, Donna, thank you very much. Also, one more thing as background. For those listening out there that are concerned about whether this could happen to their community, your community had a community plan that wouldn't have allowed this kind of development, industrial development in the backcountry. How'd that change?
We spent, our Boulevard Planning Group spent almost 14 years working through the general plan update and our community plan, and we felt pretty good that we got most of what we wanted. But within a year, that was approved by the Board of Supervisors in August 2011. In 2012, Iberdrola came in for Tule Wind and amended our community plan for their project, and the county board.
Well, listen, they can't amend it themselves. They basically persuaded the supervisors.
They put their plan forward, and the Board of Supervisors adopted their plan.
And throughout 20 years of your community planning,
they amended our community plan to say that these type of projects are not regional infrastructure for the sake of this community plan.
Wow.
And they're not major projects. What the hell are they?
Now, we're starting to see projects sprout up proposed that are major energy projects in a number of other towns around East County, who may think this can't happen to them because of zoning. If this happened to Boulevard, can it happen to other communities around San Diego County?
I've seen it already happening. I've seen it in Ramona. I've seen it in Valley Center. I just was at the Planning Commission on the 24th, and I saw it happen in Ocotillo Wells. They write overriding considerations. They say this is for the public good, it's for the greater good. But when you're doing these projects, saying for climate change, and you're taking out desert soils and chaparral that actually sequester carbon, and you're using finite desert water, who are you really helping?
Yeah, is that really green? Very, very, very good question.
The green
is
the money going
damage
into these companies' pockets.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Donna. And we now have one more guest on this very important topic. Today we have Danielle Cook, who is with she's the mover and shaker behind the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Committee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you've been working on trying to revive Hakumba and bring tourism back, and you've been really making some inroads there. You're celebrating, I understand, your centennial this year.
Yes, we've been working very hard, and I might add we've also worked with Boulevard. We are the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance.
Yeah, you've got a website set up there.
We have a website. We have a big media plan that is unfolding right now. One of my concerns is one of the few ways that the backcountry has of making money and economic vitality is through tourism. The tourists come out here because the air is clean. It's a beautiful, relaxing environment from San Diego or other places. With all of these projects coming in, especially if they dry up the aquifers, the mountain lilac will be gone. The coyotes will be gone. The quail will be gone. The birds that the Audubon come out to watch will be gone. We will be a lunar landscape out here, and tourists will not want to come out here. So the people that depend on tourism to survive are just out of luck, and I think that that is a crime.
I understand that you're getting ready to take the lead on trying to draw regional and national attention to these problems. Tell us what you're getting ready to do.
Well, we will be putting up an online petition through moveon.org. I don't know what the title of the petition will be yet, but we want to draw attention to this issue, much like Rachel Carson did. With Silent Spring. And in that land-breaking book, she virtually changed the way that people look at use of pesticides in the U.S. We want to change the way that people look at green energy. We're not against green energy. We love it. We have solar panels on our home here. Our neighbors have solar panels and their own windmill. We believe green energy belongs at the point of usage. And if you do that, you're protecting the environment. You're truly being green. These projects are a cascade of catastrophe for the environment. They're as far away from green as they can be.
And they're as far away from the urban centers in San Diego as you can be and still be in San Diego County also. So they're nowhere near the point of use for the most part.
And I know that if it wasn't for subsidies that I might add we're giving to foreign companies to come in and rape our landscape.
So taxpayers are paying
We're paying for our own destruction. How ironic.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
Soytech got a grant from the federal government to construct the plant that manufactures their particular brand of solar tracking devices called CPV, but it's going to a French company. Soytech is a French company, and I particularly resent having our taxpayer money being spent on French companies, not against foreign companies investing and helping here, but to subsidize them with our money is criminal, as I see it.
Howard, thank you so much for that perspective. I want to thank all of our guests here for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Next, we're going to hear from our region's former top fire official.
My name is Mark Ostrander. I'm a retired Cal Fire Battalion Chief. When I was employed with Cal Fire, I was also the environmental coordinator, so I reviewed the CEQA and NEPA documents for projects within San Diego and Imperial counties. Also, with that, I also had to do a few environmental documents for our department, such as notice of exemptions and whatnot. I'm here today to talk about the Soytech solar project that's coming into East County. This project is kind of unprecedented because there's been nothing of this size to even gauge it against. Soytech has not done a project this large. My main concern, and I'm going to stick to fire, there are several questions I have, from biological to aesthetics to public services to water usage. It goes on and on and on. But I'm going to talk about fire today. I'm looking through the PEIR. It's a programmatic EIR, which in my mind is not a good document to start. They should be doing an environmental impact report for this project and not a programmatic. A programmatic is going to allow for any project to use this as a template to do their projects throughout the county. So it's a major concern to me. I have been reviewing through this document, and I've always been concerned about wildfires in the backcountry. If you look at even the county's own threat assessment maps that they have, and you really have to research now and find those. You have to go outside the county area because they pulled all their sites off on their site where they produced these. I had 2008 and 2004 maps that showed the wildfire threat areas and which way predominantly the Santa Ana winds blow. And if you were to look at those maps and check when a Santa Ana wind condition is in, a fire coming within that area where they're going to put these solar panels could seriously hamper firefighting efforts. Not only that, they are also an additional impact out in there that's going to create a potential for fire. You'll hear back and forth where they talk about there's low fire activity in this particular area. One of the main reasons there's low fire activity, there's no access. There's nobody out there. There's no infrastructure. It's wildland. Well, the county has based theirs on the Riverside County Fire Department's fire reports that they had, for instance, for the last 12-year period, and they said they had 30 calls, two were fire calls, all others were medical hazards, blah, blah, blah. So they're saying it equates to 0.83 emergencies per solar facility per year. Well, I question that is because they don't tell you what size those solar projects were or those facilities. This is unprecedented. This is huge. These facilities are a lot bigger. Different technology. It hasn't been out there to see what the long-term track record is. Does it really work? Because we've heard it about the windmills, and we had a windmill fire that, wasn't supposed to happen.
And how did that happen? Like, what is the main thing that could start a fire from the windmills?
The windmills, several factors can. Electrical issues, arcing. The nacelles are made out of fiberglass, and they can catch fire, and they're highly flammable. They store oil. Large quantities of oil. I don't want to quote the gallons because I don't know that particular windmill, but they're anywhere from 100 gallons up to 500 plus gallons in each one of those. Bearing failure is one of the biggest causes. They get build up voltages along the shaft on the stators, and that's a big problem because what it does, this is what causes the bearing failures. When they're turning, there's a static charge on the shaft in the stator of voltages. Well, it has to go seek ground. So the bearing's up there in the front turning and turning and turning, but it's also arcing to the race, which creates wear and tear on that bearing because that electricity has to go somewhere. That voltage has to go somewhere. So with that happening, that's typically how the bearings fail. The other problem is when the high winds and they have to kick out and start braking, they put on a mechanical brake. That creates heating. Sometimes it causes the seal to melt or go away. The oils come out, hit the hot brake, fire. There's so many different things that create the fire. But on the solar one, the main danger is you got inverters, which some might be oil-cooled, some might not be. They could have arc flashing and several different things. The main danger to firefighters is that panels are always generating power. Regardless if you turn off the inverters, they say, we'll shut down the inverters. Those panels are producing power when sun's on it. And when they're combining them, I believe they're putting around 32,000 volts of power into the lines coming into the inverters. So that's a hazard to firefighters. They're not going to go inside that facility. If a fire happens in there, we're going to wait till it comes out. If we have a Santa Ana wind event, there you go. And we're in one of what they call, the county used to refer us to WIC areas. The fire in 2003, the Cedar Fire, went clear to San Diego. People say, that was so many years ago. Or if it happens. I always say it's not if, it's when. We live in a fire environment in San Diego County. The ecology is based on a fire environment. So it's conducive to fire year-round. We're in January right now. We could have a fire still. The fire threats, how many times did you hear it already? Just within January, three times they had the fire threat up fire watch out. We had Santa Ana winds. So San Diego is year-round fire danger.
There are two meetings coming up on the Soitec solar proposal to put roughly 8,000 solar panels on rural meadows and wetlands in Boulevard. The first meeting is sponsored by the developer Soitec and will be held Wednesday evening, January 29th at the Manzanita Diner. But Soitec doesn't appear to be very eager to field tough questions from the public on its controversial projects, since neither of the RSVP contacts listed on its announcement are working. The phone number is disconnected, and email RSVPs bounced back as undeliverable. The Boulevard Planning Group meets on Thursday, February 6th at the Boulevard Fire Station, and the Soitec Solar Project will be on its agenda, along with two possible alternative sites in Jewel Valley, where a prior industrial solar project developer withdrew following strong public opposition. Public comment on the draft programmatic environmental impact report on Soitec's four proposed industrial solar projects and the alternatives will be accepted by the county through February 17th at 4 p.m. Links to view documents and submit comments can be found at our website, eastcountymagazine.org, or on the Boulevard Planning Group's agenda, which is posted online. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Mark Gavitt reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ with news on worsening impacts of the drought. For the first time ever, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has ordered that supplies of water from the Colorado River and Glen Canyon Dam be slashed. The Colorado River is the most important water source for the Southwest, and it accounts for about 60% of San Diego County's water supply. The Colorado River is under increasing pressure from a growing population in southwestern cities in the midst of extended dry conditions. This is the worst 14-year drought period in the last 100 years, said Upper Colorado Regional Director Larry Walkoviak in a Bureau of Reclamation press release. The federal government will cut water release from Glen Canyon Dam at Lake Powell by 750,000 acre-feet this year, enough water to supply 750,000 homes. Even with that reduction, the Colorado River will still be 9% below the 8.23 million acre-feet that has customarily been supplied to Lake Mead for use in turning California, Nevada, Arizona, and Mexico under the Colorado River Compact of 1922 and other agreements. Water levels at Lake Powell have dropped 35 feet in the past year alone. Last August, Lake Powell was just at 45% of its capacity, and since then the water level has fallen at an alarming rate of 1 foot every 6 days. San Diego water officials have been working to develop alternative water supplies, including local projects such as the Carlsbad Desalination Plant, which is now under construction. But the steep cuts in our region's largest water supply, Colorado River, will put the squeeze on local water users and emphasizes the importance of conserving water, our region's most precious resource.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. And today I'm here in Hakumba Hot Springs with Danielle Cook, the chair of the Hakumba Centennial Committee. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Well, centennial, 100 years out here in Hakumba Hot Springs. That sounds pretty exciting.
Oh, we're very excited about it. One of the things that we hope to do is to be able to celebrate the tradition and the history of Hakumba Hot Springs and show its importance to San Diego County. We hope that we can also promote the unique tourist activities that we have out here so we can get more people visiting our beautiful community.
Tell us about some of the activities you have coming up in your centennial year.
Well, we have four major festivals planned. The first festival to kick off the centennial year is May 3rd, and that is our Blues Fest, our third annual Blues Fest.
Nice. And I was here last year, and that was just a lot of fun. Some really great music out there.
We actually have musicians from all over the country that come into play. And this particular festival is celebrating the fact that Hakamba always has been a center for music and arts. Troubadours and people of all stripes that play music come here. So,
what's the second event?
The second one is the Healing Waters and Arts Festival. That's going to be Saturday, May 24th. And this particular festival celebrates our Kumeyaay heritage.
Yes, the Kumeyaay were first settled thousands of years ago. Yes. We came here for the hot springs that are still here today.
And we'll have Kumeyaay bird singers. But it also celebrates the fact that we've long been known as a healing area because of our hot springs waters. So that's kind of the focus and the arts. So we're going to have holistic healers, traditional vendors, Kumeyaay bird singers. We even have a belly dance group from Sedona that got excited when they heard about our festival, and they'll be performing.
That sounds quite amazing.
It's going to be great. And we'll have children's activities like bounce houses and a water slide.
Wow, a water slide. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
What's the next one coming up?
The third one is going to be October 4th, and that is going to be our fall festival. It's going to celebrate our Western heritage. Mm. We hope to have a Wells Fargo stagecoach. We'll have some Wild Wild West shoot-em-outs, traditional vendors, cowboy music, lots of fun, and again, activities for the children.
Some cowboys and Indians throughout
the
year here.
Yes, absolutely.
And then the fourth event will be?
This one's going to be a lot of fun. We're doing a traditional Christmas festival on Saturday, December the 6th, but with a Mexico flair because of our heritage as a border community. We're going to have mariachi bands. We will have piñatas. We'll have tree trimming and all kinds of activities for the children. And we're doing some kind of luminary activity as well. We're Old Highway 80 in the main part of town will be lined with glowing pots, kind of like the old Mexican luminary, since we can't have fire out here.
Yeah, sounds beautiful.
So, yeah, we're excited about it.
These are free activities open to the public, correct?
Yes, we believe that everybody in the community, no matter their income level, should be able to enjoy and celebrate our centennial festivals. We do have two corporate sponsors already that will help us with our celebrations.
Very, very good. Where can people go to get more information about the Hakumba Centennial and all the different activities that are coming up?
Well, we've set up a website. It's www.HakumbaHotSpringsCentennial.org. Again, that's www.HakumbaHotSpringsCentennial.org.
And Hakumba is spelled J-A-C-U-M-B-A.
Thank you, Miriam. Everybody forgets that. And on that website, we talk a little bit about what makes Hakumba Hot Springs so special. We have history of Hakumba Hot Springs. Every festival will have its own web page. And we will be updating them as the year progresses. So we encourage people to visit frequently.
Well, wonderful. I'm looking forward to coming out and enjoying some of these amazing festivals that you have planned. Danielle, thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now we thought today would be an appropriate time to replay a Destination East County that we recorded last summer all about Hakumba Hot Springs. There's one update from this original broadcast, and that's that the Hakumba Hot Springs Spa is now reopened and back in business. We hope you'll enjoy this edition of On the Road in East County.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery. This week, we're on the road in Hakumba Hot Springs, a town that is bubbling with activity. The town recently changed its name to take back its historic roots. The name Hakumba means healing waters and traces its roots back to the Kumeyaay Native American people who used to spend their winters by these natural hot springs. By the 1920s, Hakumba had become a mecca for Hollywood celebrities in the silent movie era. But then a fire burned down the historic hotel and bathhouse, and construction of Interstate 8 moved traffic away from old Highway 80 through the heart of this community. Hakumba almost became a ghost town, but now it is springing back to life thanks to the vision of the people here with us today. Dave Landman is a successful businessman who was actually asked by the townspeople to buy a rundown spa and resort and turn it once again into a destination to draw people to Hakumba Hot Springs. So he bought the promissory note for the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, and he made a surprising discovery. Dave, tell us what else was in that note.
Well, it turns out that the promissory note was secured by 29 properties throughout the town. It included most of the downtown area, some residential sites, and a lot of vacant land.
So what was your reaction when you learned that you were the proud new owner of an entire town?
Well, it went from one project to 29 projects, so it was a little bit overwhelming at the time.
Now, the people of the town were confident that Dave could make this a success because he already owns another wildly successful business in Hakumba. Tell us about that, Dave.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, my wife and I bought a rundown RV park on the north side of Interstate 8, and we actually turned it into the eighth largest clothing optional resort in the United States, the Anza Springs Resort.
So what is so attractive about Hakumba to bring so many people there?
It's a number of things. Number one, it's just an hour away from San Diego, so you know, we call that the daycation destination place where people can come out for the weekend or just for the day use and enjoy the facilities. There's also the climate is beautiful because we're above the clouds, and in the summertime especially, we're so much cooler than the valley. So we get a lot of people up there from the El Centro, Yuma, Palm Springs area.
Now, Dave has been hard at work remodeling the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, adding a new restaurant and a Southwest decor. But there won't be any skinny dipping since the spa will not be clothing optional. You can find out more about their big opening season plans at the www.hakumbaresort.com. Now, Dave, what else are you planning in the area?
Nothing is finalized yet, but we've had a number of calls from people interested in renting some of the retail spaces. We've had some artists contact us because they know our desire to turn it into an art-type community. We're working on a number of things. You know, some of the things in the back of my head are maybe a winery. We've talked about a number of other things, but that one kind of comes to the head all the time.
Thank you very much, Dave. Danielle Cook is a driving force behind the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. In fact, she and her husband, Howard, helped recruit Dave to buy the Hot Springs Resort. Danielle, tell us about your vision for Hakumba Hot Springs.
My vision of Hakumba Hot Springs is similar to that of the Landmans. I envision the community as being another backcountry version, if you will, of Taos, New Mexico, a community where artists gather, where entrepreneurs want to come in and build businesses, where people want to come and chill out at the Hot Springs Spa and enjoy our special air, light, and ambiance.
You've started some websites where people can find out more about the hidden treasures in Hakumba Hot Springs and the surrounding areas.
Yes, we started a website about a year ago, www.gosandiegobackcountry.org, to give tourists an idea of some of the free things that they could do in the backcountry, in Boulevard and Hakumba, and also places where they could stay, places where they could eat. We even have a section that tells people of different hikes they can go on and gives them an idea of a road trip that they can take with their family.
And you also have another website devoted just to Hakumba, and that site is hakumba.org.
Yes.
Now, there is also a lake, Lake Hakumba, which had gone virtually dry, and now I understand it's being restored.
Hakumba Lake now is for a virtual birder's paradise. The lake is filling up naturally. We have nesting tricolors, which are a bird of special interest, according to the Audubon. We have birders there every weekend, and this has brought in business for Hakumba Lounge and will bring in business for the spa. In addition, some of the residents of Hakumba have taken it upon themselves to clear brush and have built trails, so you can now walk almost entirely around the lake.
Wow, that's great. Now, the Hakumba Lounge is a new Wi-Fi cafe and coffee house that opened up recently. Plus, as you mentioned, the Hakumba Hikers and Walkers is another new group that's formed, and they're leading people on treks all over through the scenic mountains, deserts, and historic sites in this region. Hakumba also has an arts council, and recently they revived another town tradition, the Hakumba Blues Festival.
Enigmatic love, a love like no other. Ooh-hoo-hoo. In the summer sun, I strolled the shore. The sand warmed my feet. The waves soothed my heart within a glowing light.
I'm here today with Joe Marshall, a talented blues musician who is the powerhouse behind the festival. Joe, tell me how long you've been playing the blues.
Well, I've been playing the blues for about 45 years, and I got interested in the blues. Some friends of mine started turning me on to it. At the time, I was interested in most rock and roll, I guess about anybody my age would have been. And I found that the blues suited more of my music because I primarily play the harmonica. I love the blues because it's for everybody. It's from the working man to the white collar.
This is the second annual Hakumba Blues Festival. What makes this such a special event for the local musicians?
It's a great event for the local musicians. They get to network. They get to meet a lot of other musicians from all over. We had musicians from San Diego. We had musicians from Imperial Valley. We had musicians from the Midwest. We had musicians from Northern California. And so it made it very special, primarily because of that, and secondly because it gave all these people a chance to reunite.
So it's one big jam session out there.
One big family, one big jam session, yes.
We're going to end today by playing a little riff here from Mama Christie, who is one of the talented musicians that you could hear out at the Hakumba Blues Festival. And you can find her music at www.mamachristie.com. This song is called Drip, and it was written after the 9/11 attacks, and it's all about the healing power of love. And here in the town of Healing Waters, Hakumba Hot Springs, it seems especially fitting. You can find out more about Hakumba Hot Springs at www.eastcountymagazine.org, and be sure to tune in for future editions of On the Road in East County. If you drive 60 miles east of San Diego, you'll reach Boulevard, a sparsely populated rural community of about 1,800 people. Your view will encompass manzanita trees, oaks, and granite boulders, but no shopping malls or gleaming high-rises. In fact, you won't see a lot of new buildings at all. The town's fire station is a converted old court office. But that won't be true for long. Last week, County Board of Supervisors Chair Diane Jacob joined county officials and community members to break ground on a new $3.5 million fire station, which will serve a 78-square-mile area. Chairwoman Jacob said, "This is not only a big step for our community, it's an important step for the broader region. This project is the latest demonstration of the county's commitment to beefing up fire protection and emergency medical response in our rural areas," she added. The new 7,866-square-foot station on Ribbonwood Road will feature modern sleeping quarters, a training room, and space for up to 6 emergency vehicles, as well as solar power. It will be the 16th rural fire station building project that the county has completed since supervisors formed the new County Fire Authority in 2008. Before that, many rural communities were served by part-time volunteers who responded from work or home. One of the improvements under the fire authority is to make sure that communities are covered by firefighters around the clock, all year round, though there have been challenges in achieving that goal. Many of the old volunteer fire company stations weren't designed for people to live or sleep there, so the county's been busy renovating and building to make fire stations appropriate for 24-hour shifts. Now, an East County Magazine report last year revealed that the current Boulevard fire station had been closed nearly every day for over 2 months in peak fire season, along with some other rural stations that also had dark days. As a result of our special investigation, overtime pay was later authorized to assure staffing 24/7. Supervisor Jacob convened a meeting with fire officials and concerned citizens to discuss the staffing shortfalls. Now, when it's finished, the station will be spacious enough to accommodate two fire companies. That's right, two. The community of Boulevard is also served by the Cal Fire station called White Star, which is one of nine Cal Fire stations that the county funds to remain open in winter and help make sure rural communities have year-round emergency response. But the state's Cal Fire station is coming to the end of its life. After the new Boulevard station opens, county volunteer firefighters and Cal Fire firefighters may share the same facility. The plan would save public money by saving the cost of constructing and operating two different stations covering the same general area. County volunteers get the same basic training as Cal Fire firefighters, and under the fire authority, backcountry firefighters are dispatched and overseen by Cal Fire. That means that Cal Fire dispatches the closest resource to an emergency, and whether it's a volunteer or a Cal Fire crew, the public is to get a professional, timely response, the county says. Now, some in the community have raised concerns over what happens if a Cal Fire crew is dispatched out of the area to fight a wildfire. Area residents just want to be sure that the station will be adequately staffed, not only with Cal Fire firefighters, but also local crews with adequate equipment that can respond quickly to structure fires or fires at major energy projects in the Boulevard area. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Okay, this is Miriam Raftery. Today, I'm going to be interviewing two of our interns from High Tech High, Mark Gavitt and Julian Redfall. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Miriam. Glad to be here. Yeah, it's good to be here.
So I'm going to ask each of you if you'd tell our readers a little bit about yourself, your school, and what made you decide to intern with East County Magazine. Mark, why don't you go first?
Well, I'm a 17-year-old junior at High Tech High International, and for the past 3 weeks now, we've been interning at East County Magazine. It's a program through our school where we basically pick a place and go intern there for about a month.
Yeah, it's a really neat program because it's pretty much full-time immersion. It's not part-time internship.
So there's barely any schoolwork involved other than daily blog posts, just summing up what we did that day. But we don't go to school. We just go straight to the internship and do work and do the job that we signed up for. And luckily enough, Julian and I signed up for an awesome job here at East County Magazine, and we've been loving it.
Very good. Julian, what made you choose East County Magazine over whatever other opportunities there might have been?
I've always been interested in the news, and I've really wanted to broadcast or do something with my voice, or, you know, that's always been an interest of mine. And when I heard that Mark was signing up for this and he talked to you, I just, you know, and he said, oh, you should try as well. I jumped on it. I thought that was great. And just when we first came to your house and, you know, got the feel of it. And I think that day, even though it wasn't set in stone, I did a small crime report about some mailbox that, you know, it was.
Yeah, you jumped right in.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that I was going to enjoy myself.
Very good. And Mark, did you have a particular interest in journalism or writing? Or?
Journalism and writing were my main focus. And I was very unlike Julian in the sense that I did not want to do any broadcasting. Even doing something like this is still a little nerve-wracking for me. But
you were a really good sport about it. You jumped in and you gave it a try. And
now I really enjoy this and feels good to step out of my comfort zone.
Very good.
I think is the main goal of this internship.
Most definitely.
And that's definitely been achieved.
Yeah, broadcast experience is, I think, really positive because learning speaking skills. I can't speak now myself. Learning speaking skills is such an important thing, and it can help you in so many areas in life, whether you're doing a job interview or having to give a school presentation. It's just one of those skills that I think is great for everybody to learn. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about, or tell our listeners a little bit, about some of the other kinds of projects that you've been able to work on at your internship here with us.
Well, one of my most memorable experiences was definitely when we went and covered the Helix High School
Performing Arts Center.
Arts Complex, the grand opening of that. That was just an amazing experience. We did every little bit of journalism there, from grabbing sound bites to interviewing
politicians,
the police officials,
right? No,
school officials, students, everything you can imagine just went down that day. And
yeah, it was great, and you guys did a really professional job, put together.
And I think
very
it
nice
really showed the
story,
kind of the good team that we have, because that I was the person that was going up and asking, you know, talking to people and talking with them. And then Mark did a great job editing that and putting together this great script. And I think it really showed, you know, the good team that we were as interns.
Now, not only have these kids been doing stories for our news website, writing, researching, doing radio sound stories for us, but they've also actually helped us with our technical needs, these high-tech high kids, you know. Like any office, we have those days where the microphone doesn't work or we can't get some software downloaded or something isn't working right on the website, and they've just been awesome at figuring that out. So I'm really so
Thank
impressed
you.
With the interns, all of them that we've had from high-tech high so far.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about some of the subject matters that you guys have covered in some of the stories you've been working on.
Okay, well, we've been covering a wide variety of little fun stories through events in East County to even more serious political matters and, you know, to local, to very large scale. So it's been a really nice variety of...
Yeah, you did a restaurant review for us.
Restaurant review, which was great. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. It was fun to be kind of like the one, you know, critiquing, going in there.
Tough job if someone has to do it.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And education issues, crime issues.
It's really amazing. We covered things that I would not think we covered. Just about everything, really, is newsworthy.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're getting ready. Over the weekend, we'll be taking a field trip out to the back country here and interviewing some folks out there. And for your final project, we're going to be working on some really major investigative stories that you'll be involved with. Mm-hmm. And so, how do you feel about working on a major investigative story?
A little bit anxious, I have to say, and excited and curious, because I've always wondered how these things come about.
Right.
And to actually have an opportunity to be part of that is just awesome.
Well, we're so glad to have you on board. We can't tell you yet what these big stories are going to be, but they involve energy and water issues and a little bit of political scandal. So, folks, stay tuned, and I think you're going to really enjoy the fine work that these students are doing for us.
I think that it really, because, you know, when I watch the news or I hear some big story or involving a political scandal, I feel like I very distance it from myself and my personal life. But this makes me realize that not only am I firsthand in part of figuring out something, but that it just makes me kind of center myself more to, like, where I am and, like, the society around me. It just makes me pay attention a little bit more in a way that I didn't really appreciate before, I think.
Right. You know, when people think of reporting, they often think of the big national story, somebody you see on CNN or something. But community journalism really is where we can often make a very big difference in our community just by helping to get the news out and the truth out about what's happening with something as simple as a city council decision or a major energy project or a development that's proposed. So it's really a valuable public service. Yeah. And we love training and mentoring the journalists of tomorrow and letting them get experience in just all facets of the business.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of my most enjoyable experiences when we sat in a El Cajon council meeting, that was extremely interesting and eye-opening, that I vaguely knew about that, but that if you have an issue in your community, you know, there's people that will listen, and you can go and possibly even pass ordinances and laws, you know, and, you know, you have a voice in your community. That
yeah, you got to see ordinary citizens getting up and speaking about issues such as the proposed regulation of e-cigarettes, electronic cigarettes was the issue we were tracking out there. And it was very, very interesting. So, did this make you feel, you know, more enthused about considering a potential career in the future in some sort of journalism or media-related field?
Definitely.
Most definitely.
Yeah, it's really opened up my eyes. Because like we were saying a little bit ago, this isn't national news. It's a small community. And what's really amazing about that is that although it's not national and doesn't affect everyone, it affects us and our community. And that is just as important and apparent as the national news. And I think that there needs to be people to cover that passionately and with hard work. And that's what I'm stoked about. And that's what I'm here for and what I'm learning.
Mm-hmm. I agree totally. And it, like you said, if I feel like I would pursue something in journalism. Yeah, I think before it was like this idea that sounded very interesting, but it's kind of unobtainable. But just, you know, the amazing amount of stuff you've been letting us do and, you know, dabbling in different subjects and different ways how to report, I just realized that it actually is doable and something that I would really consider.
Great. Well, we're really glad that you've enjoyed your internship and found it worthwhile. And for listeners out there, if any of you are students and you're interested in interning with East County Magazine, you can drop an email to me at editor@eastcountymagazine.org. And we also train community volunteers as well. That's how we're able to do so well and earn those 55 journalism awards, even though we don't have the big budgets of some of the larger news organizations around town. So thank you so much for your internship and for all of your hard work here for East County Magazine.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mary.
Yeah. It's been quite the experience.
Okay.
This is Eli Cameron with a traffic alert. Motorists should expect short delays on portions of State Route 94 for the next 2 weeks as work continues on a pavement rehabilitation project. One-way traffic control will be in effect on eastbound Highway 94 from Proctor Valley Road, Otay Lakes Road, and in the westbound direction in the vicinity of Marin Valley Road from now through Monday, February 17th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., according to Caltrans. No work is expected to take place during the weekends. Construction crews are taking advantage of unseasonably warm weather to continue the project. Flaggers will be on site directing motorists through the one-way traffic control, and signs will be placed at both ends of the construction zone. Motorists may experience some delays, but the traffic wait should not exceed 10 minutes in either direction, according to Caltrans. The work is needed to provide a smoother ride for motorists and extend the life of the pavement. Caltrans thanks motorists for being patient during this construction and suggests that you allow extra time for their travel along these portions of State Route 94.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.